This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas. Powered by U-Mobile, Malaysia's number one 5G network.
BFM 89.9, this is the Breakfast Grill. I'm Keith Kam. This month, April, the world is celebrating 50 years since Sweden's ABBA won the Eurovision Song Contest with Waterloo and thus began the meteoric phenomenon of the supergroup that has since defined the world of music. Today, Swedish songwriters, most famously Max Martin, are responsible for iconic tunes from Taylor Swift, The Weeknd and Britney Spears, just to name a few. The country's 10.5 million population, about a third of Malaysia's, is influential not just in pop culture, but is leading the way in social welfare, climate change solutions and renewable energy. Let's find out how this soft diplomacy works with Sweden's ambassador to Malaysia, Joachim Bergström, and see if they can spread that influence for good. Welcome to BFM, Your Excellency.
Thank you, and I'm so happy you've summarized my country so well.
Joachim, Sweden is at the forefront of green technology. It is the best in Europe and amongst the top 10 at recycling. How did Sweden manage to transition towards this industry in such a relatively short period?
So, first of all, Sweden this year celebrates 500 years of independent national state. And during these years, and it's related to your questions, Sweden has gone from one of the poorest nations in Europe to now being a welfare state that leads in the area of green transition in innovation. We have a strong democracy and a strong equality and sense of community and cohesion. The sustainability leadership in Sweden has gained recognition for its sustainability and environmental conservation. First, we've had ambitious goals to become carbon neutral by 2045 and also leading the way in renewable energy adoption, waste management and eco-friendly practices. Initiatives like the Stockholm Act and the Swedish Environmental Protection Agency showcase Sweden's dedication to preserving the planet for future generations. This work has partly been done by strong policies by the government, but it's also come about with a very strong commitment by social civil society. So there's been both a top-down and a bottom-up approach to climate change. And it's been led by strong actors within the entrepreneurial and industry sectors, with the recognition that in order to stay in business, in order to be economically viable, you also have to go green.
And indeed, you are a global leader in decarbonization, and you did mention that your plan is to become a net zero carbon economy by 2045. If we were to do an assessment today, how far is Sweden from achieving this target?
We are very well underway of achieving this target. We've come such a long way when it comes to renewable energy, energy efficient solutions, sustainable transportation. We're also very well away when it comes to waste to energy, sustainable mining, automotive solutions within manufacturing as well, e-mobility and digitalization. So we're very well underway. And this is also very much part of our discussions and our collaborations in Malaysia.
And indeed, we spoke with your trade commissioner to Malaysia, Emma Broms, nearly a year ago. This was right after an MOU was signed with our Malaysian Green Technology and Climate Change Corporation, basically to intensify collaboration, ensuring a green transition in Malaysia. What's been the progress so far?
So the issue of green transition and sustainability really runs through all our conversations in Malaysia, whether it is with government actors or with companies, with civil society or people-to-people. All Swedish companies that are present here as well are really able to show how they have shifted their practices to become more sustainable and green. So we feel that we're not only talking the talk, but we're walking the talk. The Team Sweden here in Malaysia is also very active in this space when it comes to interaction with Malaysian actors, whether, again, within government or in the private sector. And we have a number of initiatives and platforms in which we advance this. One is Pioneer the Possible, which is a long-running platform through which we are facilitating cooperation and raising awareness around around sustainability, bringing together actors from Malaysia to conversations and to knowledge sharing and awareness raising activities with Swedish companies such as ABB, Atlas Copco, Volvo, to name a few, within the area of mobility, manufacturing, hoping to go forward also within digitalization, smart cities, and so forth. So since my colleague was here to speak, I think we've taken a number of steps to deepen and to broaden the relationship and the dialogue with Malaysia.
And this is via Business Sweden, right?
Right. So they are lead on it, but it's a Team Sweden approach. So we have a very integrated way of working the embassy, Business Sweden, and the private sector here.
So it was launched last year. What are some of the major milestones since?
So we've had a number of events and dialogues encompassing partners here in Malaysia, again, on the topics of green mobility, on manufacturing, looking also at how supply chain changes are affecting the region and so forth. And recently, we have also launched a people-to-people platform called Jom Kita Bincang, which has been a platform through which we have tried to raise awareness around sustainability and planetary health, but also human rights and social issues through the lens of children's literature, but reaching out to schools and libraries and actors within the government.
And that's where you had a conversation with my colleague Juliet Jacobs recently as well. Okay. Now, all this talk about sustainability and with a lot of attention being paid to climate change issues, we can't run away from the discussion on palm oil, which is Malaysia's main export, which makes up about 10% of Sweden's total imports from Malaysia. Well, I mean, there's a lot of negative publicity from your European Union partners. What role do you see Swedish industries playing to get the message out that it is indeed sustainably produced here, if that is what you guys believe?
So Sweden is a part of the EU, and we are a very active and an involved partner in the policy process of the entire European Union for in-depth conversations about the EU legislation and the EU palm issue. I'll refer you to the European Commission and the delegation of the European Union here. What I can say is that the World Trade Organization has recently settled the palm oil question. Mm-hmm. We are happy that both the EU and Malaysia have welcomed the ruling, and now it's up to both parties to comply with this decision and to move forward.
Sometime last year as well, you established an honorary council of Sweden at the Kota Kinabalu Industrial Park. Tell me more about how this is going. Why in Sabah?
So we've had a consul in Sabah for many years, and the predecessor of the now current honorary consul retired.
All right.
So this was a process where we found a candidate and we inaugurated a new honorary consulate in Sabah to take care of some of the interests there, of course, in close cooperation with the embassy. We also, during the fall, opened an honorary consulate in Penang with a new honorary consul. So we have now two honorary consuls in Malaysia, both women, as Sweden is also a country that continues to press for gender equality and democracy and so forth. So we are happy to work towards the gender balance also in Sweden's overall, you know, presence in with honorary consuls.
These consuls, wouldn't they be duplicating the work that's already been done by the office in Kuala Lumpur?
Well, let's call it more as a support and being on the ground. Sometimes we have situations where tourists, Swedish citizens, run into issues and they need to be assisted on the ground. And both Sabah and the area of Penang are areas where a lot of tourists go to. So we feel that this is, you know, a necessity to have consuls on the ground who can assist. This can be in emergency situations, but it can also be a more, you know, running assistance to the regular operations of the embassy. So for instance, we recently had one Pioneer the Possible activity in Kota Kinabalu, where our honorary consul Oigio Kling was very instrumental.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Sweden's ambassador to Malaysia, Joachim Bergström. On the other side of the break, let's explore how Sweden has been able to play its influential role in today's current geopolitical climate. at BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile, Malaysia's number one 5G network.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where in the studio with me is Joachim Bergström, the Swedish ambassador to Malaysia. Joachim, I remember back in 2013 or thereabouts, Sweden was world-renowned for having taken a lead role in offering Syrian refugees fleeing conflict, which, sad to say, is still ongoing to this day, a chance to resettle in Sweden. They were granted permanent residence so that they could live and work under the same conditions as every other Swedish resident, and also permits family reunifications. It has also been more than a decade. How would you say this has changed Swedish society and, I suppose, what it means to be Swedish?
Well, first of all, Syria is a place I know very well. I partly grew up there. I lived there in 1976 and 77, and then I lived there again between 89 and 91. So it's a place I know well, and I worked on the Middle East issue for a long time. When it comes to challenges in our society, I think that there is a strong recognition in our government that we are now facing unprecedented challenges. It has to do with the war that runs in Europe as a consequence of Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine, mm-hmm. with consequences also on energy prices, inflation, and foreign policy considerations for Europe. We're also standing with complex economic issues like high inflation, lower than expected growth, and raising interest rates, unprecedented for the past 30 years, with growing geopolitical tensions, as you mentioned. And we're also seeing increase in both terrorism and organized crime. Some of these issues and some issues when it comes to demands on the welfare state or on demands of law and order, there's a strong recognition within our government that some of these issues are related to the failure in some aspects of Sweden to immigrate some of the immigrants that have come to us over the past decades. About 20% of Sweden's population now are immigrants. Mm. And because of a number of problems, lacking policies, lacking integration, and historically somewhat lax application of rules. Yeah. There have been issues, again, pertaining to law and order, to the wave of criminality that we see, and also the threat from terrorism that are now being dealt with by this government in a very coherent manner.
What I meant was, I mean, how has the attitude evolved over time amongst Swedes, you know, with the influx of immigrants into the country? I mean, has it changed society in any way?
Well, that depends on who you ask. Mm-hmm. Of course, we both have a strong historical solidarity. We are a country which, first, we prioritize the multilateral world order. We stand strong with democracy and human rights. And historically, we have been very strong in solidarity with people of other nations that have had a hard time, whether in famine or in war, or in other kinds of domestic authoritarian situations. So, depending on who you ask, mm-hmm. you both have people in the society, and we saw this around the migration crisis around 2015. People, you know, going through their homes to find blankets and kitchen goods that they could donate to the immigrants, and many Swedes also opening their homes to refugees. So that's one side. But also, we have an increased sense of enough is enough, and that the immigration has gone beyond point of capacity.
And that's where the situation is right now?
Well, I think you have both, depending on who you ask. I don't think that there's a majority of either saying either. I think you still have, you know, quite varied discourse on this issue. But the current government has been very clear on the need to sharpen and strengthen rules around immigration, limiting immigration to make it possible for the Swedish society to integrate, to absorb. Also increased demands when it comes to immigrants learning the Swedish language, people coming to Sweden willing to take up a job and support themselves, and immigrants also living in accordance with Swedish legislation and social traditions, and in fact not committing crimes, whether it is in violent gang criminality or if it is infringement of women and youth.
Because this leads me to the next question, because late last year when you mentioned gang violence, there was a time when Sweden was in an unenviable position of having the second highest gun crime death rate in Europe after Albania. Does this mean you guys might have reached a saturation point? How is this being tackled today?
Well, so part of it is tackled through a sharpening of the migration policies and reducing the immigration so that we can cope with the immigration that we have. But this is part of the problem that you're referencing. But when it comes to criminality, a number of reforms are now coming along to make harsher punishments for severe criminality and a stronger focus on the victim than on the perpetrator. But the government is also putting a lot of efforts into the preventive work when it has to, all of government approach to crime prevention, so that the social services, schools will have an easier time talking with the police system, for instance, to prevent crime, sharpening the responsibility for parents in these equations, and also clearer consequence for early criminality. So there is a balance between repressive actions, such as harsher laws, but also on prevention.
Do you think this may have been a reason why you have a new prime minister, Ulf Kristersson, who leads a government, a minority government nonetheless, that's a little bit more right-wing than its predecessor? Have sentiments changed among Swedes because of this?
So many of the things in Swedish politics are part of our DNA. For instance, the welfare state, many tenets of our foreign policy are constant things that are always there. We have now a government led by the Moderat together with the Christian Democrats and the Liberals with the support of the Sweden Democrats. They won the election about a year and a half ago, partly as a consequence of some of the issues that, that you reference. Criminality, cost of living, migration, the overall future of our welfare state. Those are some of the issues that Swedish voters feel strong about, and they dominated also the electoral cycle that brought this government in. And this government is now in full force to implement changes and reforms on all these issues in order to set the course straight.
You guys also abandoned 200 years of neutrality and joined NATO. How have ordinary Swedes reacted to this?
Well, so first of all, the NATO membership is a concrete and tangible consequence of the full war on Ukraine that Russia illegally waged. Historically, when you look at the Swedish debate about NATO membership, the social democratic camp has been opposed to joining NATO, and the more conservative camp has been in favor. Today, there is an across the aisle agreement that joining NATO is the way forward, and that the challenges and the threats to European security that that the war on Ukraine caused by Russia inflicted on Europe needs to be tackled in this multilateral fora. We stand committed to an open, rules-based and transparent world order, and we feel that Sweden's national security interests, our independence, sovereignty and territorial integrity will be best guaranteed through NATO membership. And in addition to that, we also feel that with Sweden now joining NATO, NATO will also be stronger and that the developments in our neighborhood will be more predictable and that our neighbors will also feel more secure going forward.
I want to wrap this conversation up with how PM Staats Minister Kristersson's administration is handling the Israel-Palestine issue. Because I recall that Sweden was the first EU member to recognize Palestine as a state. That was back in 2014, I believe. Today's government was in the opposition at that time. Where does Stockholm stand today?
So this is a very complicated and historically, as you know, very dragged out situation with a couple of components that I think need to be clear, although we cannot unpack every aspect of it. First of all, Sweden has had a very strong commitment over the years to a negotiated two-state solution with strong support both to Israel's right to exist, but also for the creation of a Palestinian statehood. We feel that the right of Israel to exist is an unquestioned tenet of our foreign policy, and that Israel has the right to support itself against terrorism and against Hamas. So in this context, the government feels that the hostages must be released immediately and unconditionally, but we also feel that a humanitarian ceasefire is necessary. Israel, on the other hand, has a responsibility to conduct its defense in compliance with international law and international humanitarian law. Mm-hmm. Sweden has historically also been a very strong donor and supporter of the Palestinian cause through organizations like UNRWA. We've been the fourth largest donor. Aid has now been resumed to them, and we also support activities on the ground through the world, the UN World Food Program and others. The bottom line here is that the only way forward is a negotiated two-state solution. And it was also in this vein that in 2014, that Sweden, the then Social Democratic Party, recognized Palestine, partly to put the negotiating parties on more eye level so that they could somehow instill a hope in the peace process.
So you guys would be along the lines of your neighbor Norway and EU partners, Ireland and Spain, who have recently stated that they are closer to recognizing Palestinian statehood.
Well, so Sweden already in 2014 recognized Palestine. And again, as...
That hasn't changed.
That hasn't changed. And that is a part of, you know, empowering the de-escalation and the negotiations and the dialogue and the multilateral way forward to settle the issue of conflict between Israel and Palestine and to make them be able to coexist in peace and security.
Your Excellency, taksamike.
Thank you.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, I was talking to Joachim Bergström, Sweden's ambassador to Malaysia. I'm Keith Kalm for BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beyond financial mastery, the Breakfast Grill with U-Mobile Biz, Malaysia's number one 5G network. 5G makes business sense.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.